CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome the founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Cliff May, writing at the Washington Times about the present quandary. What is to be done with Iran? We know that the Biden administration is very straightforward. It wants to reawaken or refashion or reorganize or in some fashion point back to 2015 in the Iran deal of JCPOA and update it. There are many possibilities. We know this. At the same time, we're watching the conflict in and around Israel, and Cliff presents the facts of how Iran is participating in the attacks on our ally Israel and threatens the whole region with disorder. At the same time, the Biden administration is talking in some fashion in a back stair in a Vienna hotel. Cliff, I hope I've outlined the paradox completely. Iran is driver for violence, but Iran is seen by the Biden administration as a possibility for peace. Do these two things belong in the same room? Good evening to you, Cliff.
Good evening to you. No, they do not. The idea that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, can be America's strategic partner and a force for stability in the Middle East is very odd. How anyone who understands Khomeinism, who understands what's happened since the 1979 Islamic revolution that occurred in Iran, it was more than an Iranian revolution. It was always said to be more than an Iranian revolution. How anybody who looks at that and doesn't understand it is very puzzling. But this was the view that President Obama had. It was a view that, look, we can give them some of what they want, and they'll be satisfied with that. They'll be a major force in the Middle East. They just won't be the hegemon running everything. But the ambitions of this regime in Iran are much greater than that. And it appears, oddly, despite everything we've seen over the past 4 years, that the Biden administration wants to recapitulate the policy of the Obama administration and give power and money to Iran's rulers, even though they know they will use them in all sorts of nefarious ways and ways that are not good for the American national security interest.
I want to update Iran since 2015, since the original deal, because the Trump administration intervened. Somewhere in between was another version of how to treat Iran. The severe sanctions, it's said that they damaged the Iranian economy. It's said that they prevented Iran from gaining the capital it needs to support its terrorist organizations around the world. Is that accurate, or did Iran beat all those sanctions, Cliff, in your measure?
In my measure, first of all, the severe sanctions were in place under the Trump administration for only 2 years. They did significant damage. Had they been continued, I think the Islamic Republic of Iran would have been pushed up against the wall and would have had to make a very tough decision. And they would have said, look, the most important for us is to survive. If that means we have to taper our ambitions, we will do so. And I think that would have happened. But relieving the pressure allows them to do what they've done. And all you need to do, and I point this out in my column in the Washington Times, posted last night in the paper today, look around the region at what the Islamic Republic of Iran is doing, funding, arming, and instructing Hamas so that it has 30,000 missiles, 3,000 of which have been fired against Israel, funding, arming, instructing Hezbollah, which dominates Lebanon. You and I have talked about this. Lebanon is a failing state, falling to abject poverty, instructing, funding, and arming Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian dictator, who has killed hundreds of thousands of his own citizens and displaced millions more to scant press attention. And the Houthi rebels in Yemen, according to the UN, that's the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Why would you want to empower and enrich the regime responsible for all that?
Also, in between these events, the JCPOA of 2015 and the Biden ambition of 2021 is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is at odds profoundly with Tehran. Saudi Arabia is part of the conversation about peace in the Middle East. What place does Saudi Arabia have in the event that the Biden administration is successful of reawakening the Iran deal?
That would be dreadful for the Saudis. The Saudis recognize that the Islamic Republic of Iran is an existential threat, not just to Israel, but also to them. It's been very clear from the start that that's how this regime in Tehran, it looks upon the Saudis as interlopers who have no business being the custodians of the holy places of Mecca and Medina, and would love to push them out, and also believes, and actually there's some justice in this, that the Saudis have been very cruel to the Shia, small Shia minority in Saudi Arabia, who happen to sit above the lands where most of the oil is. The Saudis have, again, it's odd, the Saudis came to power in Arabia because they were great fighters, kind of like the Vikings in Scandinavia, but kind of like the Scandinavians, they're no longer great seen as great fighters. And so they look around the region and say, who can protect us from the Islamic Republic of Iran? The Americans were our partners in this. We no longer have faith that they necessarily will be much longer. They look at the Israelis. The Israelis are the only ones in the region who have the determination and the military prowess to stand up to the Islamic Republic of Iran. That is an important part of the relationship that's been brewing up, and the Abraham Accords. The Saudis aren't part of it, but they gave their approval, we know that, to Bahrain and to the Emiratis and to others who have joined that, because they see that the Israelis are strategically not a threat, strategically, in fact, their allies.
Is the Iran deal as talked about? Because we don't have anything written down. We don't know what it'll look like. And it's said to be turning on the suspect nuclear weapons program. But in any event, it's a rapprochement, fancy French word for we can get along with our differences. Is that a threat to the Abraham Accords? Does that in some fashion make the Abraham Accords inoperative or non-useful?
No, I don't think so. Though at a certain point, if you're the Saudis or you're the Bahrainis or the Emiratis, you've got to decide, is it hopeless? Do we need to try to go to Tehran, hat in hand, as it were, and say, all right, what do we have to do so that you don't kill us? Can we forge a separate peace? Can we have a rapprochement? What is that you need from us? We're willing to kowtow. We're willing to submit. But tell us how. Now, I would say that the Bahrainis, the Saudis, the Emiratis, and others have not made that decision to do that. But that is always a possibility if they say, you know what, the Israelis are not going to be, the future is that this region will be under essentially an empire based in Tehran. Now, how do we survive? At the end of the day, very few nations put anything above their survival. So they strategically try to figure out, what do we need to do to survive?
Now, Cliff, it's well known that the enemy gets a vote, but I'm going to update it. The ally gets a vote, too. So let's go to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, in observing this new possibility of a second JCPOA, it endured the first one. Will it endure the second one if it exists?
Well, it will have to endure it, but what it will say is, all right, America has decided that it's okay with the U.S. under this agreement that the Islamic Republic of Iran, which has vowed for over 40 years death to America and death to Israel, not necessarily in that order, it's okay that they should get nuclear weapons as long as they put it off for a few years, because that's what the JCPOA does or did. It doesn't stop the Islamic Republic of Iran from getting nuclear weapons. It only delays it possibly for a while, at the same time that the Islamic Republic of Iran can build, for example, missiles that can carry the nuclear warheads that they are presumably not building as quickly as they might be able to do so. The Israelis, I think, at that point say, look, we've always said several things. We've always said we're responsible for our own defense. No Americans, nobody else. We don't expect anybody else to fight for us. If we have to fight against the Islamic Republic of Iran, because it represents an existential threat, we will do so, whatever the cost, and we will try to figure out the best way. The Israelis have, over the past year or two, as you know, found various ways to set back the nuclear weapons production program, development production program of Iran's rulers. They've done so with very clever sabotage and some targeted assassinations. I think they will do what they have to do in order to survive, and in the hope that they can survive if they see that they have dangerous enemies who want to destroy them. Israel has always faced enemies that want not to get it to compromise or change its policies, but enemies that wanted to exterminate the state of Israel. That was the case in the first war in 1948, the second war in 1967. Hamas is very clear about this, doesn't mince words. Hezbollah is very clear. Hezbollah reports to Tehran. Tehran incites and vows genocide of the Jewish state.
And therefore, we've 30 seconds here. The idea is that the new Iran deal will make it possible for Hezbollah and Hamas to stand down? That's the vision for Mr. Biden. We have 30 seconds.
I don't think Mr. Biden actually does think that. I think what they've been saying and what Obama was saying is, look, they're bad actors. We don't want them to have nuclear weapons, so we need to prevent that or at least delay that. And who knows what will happen over the next few years while we are delaying that. We think it's worth having a delay. But there is nothing in the 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action about supporting terrorism, about inciting genocide against Israel, about not supporting Hezbollah, Houthis, Hamas, and others. Nothing in there about that.
Cliff May, founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.